Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Happy Halloween, Paco.
Happy Halloween, George.
You're listening to SupDoc. Hi, I'm Paco Romain.
I'm George Chen.
And this is a show where we talk to interesting people with strong opinions about their favorite documentaries.
And on today's episode, we'll be discussing the 2001 documentary Hell House by George Ratliff. This documentary follows a Texas church's annual haunted house that has an evangelical agenda.
And our guest today is writer and podcaster Molly Lambert.
Molly Lambert, thank you for coming to our show and being part of it.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Hi, Molly.
Hi.
So we were talking before George pushed record, and you were we were talking a little bit about the music scene. And do you want to talk about Grantland? We can edit this
out. Oh, yeah. Actually. Well, so you're currently do a podcast on MTV and write for MTV.
Yeah.
And before that, with Grantland for a while.
Yeah.
Quite a while.
Yeah. And before that, I was various places and wrote for Pitchfork a little bit. And before that, I had my own website called This Recording that my friend Alex and I started. And that's how I got here today.
That's a short route.
It's a long...
It felt long.
Lateral move.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Lateral move to this podcast.
And you also have a podcast.
Yeah, I have a podcast called North Mollywood that is a lot of California ephemera and apocrypha type stuff.
What's ephemera?
Just weird random stuff, gotcha. I guess. We talk a lot about space and underwater.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that makes sense. I listened to one of your episodes and it was all about space.
Yeah.
A recent one.
It didn't set out to be a space podcast, but it just kind of got there.
Those are your interests.
Those are my interests.
And the sea.
And the sea.
And you're from California.
Yeah.
From LA area.
Yeah, I'm from the Valley. And you are also from California, right?
I'm from San Jose.
Yeah.
Which I don't like to brag about because why would I?
It's a nice city.
It's nearish to the Winchester Mystery House.
That is another crazy haunted house that I've never been to. Have any of you guys been to the Winchester?
I've never been there. I really want to go. They just put out a press release that they found a secret new room.
What?
And then my friend Colin Dickey, who just wrote a book about haunted stuff called Ghostland, he just did a reading there, and he told us, he burst our bubble and said that the new room was maybe exaggerated. Maybe it was a Halloween press release.
They were
trying to get interest in the Winchester Mystery House.
Paco, do you know the story of the Winchester Mystery House?
I don't. Share it.
So it is the only attraction in San Jose, is my understanding, outside of Great America.
And the sharks.
The sharks, I don't know if that's an attraction, but... She is the widow of the Winchester rifle family, the founder. And so basically, at some point, she realized she had these hallucinations or just belief that all the ghosts of all the people that were killed, like in Manifest Destiny coming out west, like all the Native Americans and all the pioneers, she was being haunted by the ghosts of all the people that had been killed by the Winchester rifle. And so she built a crazy house to confuse ghosts.
Oh.
That has a bunch of stairways that lead nowhere and doors that open into nothing.
I think I remember seeing this on That's Incredible, obscure 80s TV show.
I know that's exactly where you would see it.
Yeah. Do you know That's Incredible?
I know of it.
Okay.
It's the sort of thing I would watch and might watch all of on YouTube now that you reminded me.
Yeah, That's Incredible was incredible. It was a great show, especially for kids, man. It was always really, there was real people, and that's incredible. Two of my favorite shows.
I do remember the logo vaguely, the very 70s logo.
Yeah, very squishy and marshmallowy.
Also, yeah, and then there was Ripley's, which later was hosted by Dean Cain. There's a Dean Cain period of Ripley's.
Oh, yeah.
But I think there was a different Ripley's, believe it or not. It's also just like true weirdness, like the longest fingernails.
Yeah, right.
Documented on Earth, that kind of thing.
Well, if you're listening to this podcast, which you are, I guess, because you're hearing me say this, but it's Halloween.
Yeah.
So happy Halloween.
Happy Hallows Eve.
Molly, what was your favorite costume that you ever had on Halloween?
Man, I don't know. Feel like I don't have a good answer for that question. One time I went, you know what, maybe I do have a good answer.
There
One time I went as astronaut ice cream. Okay. And I wore like Neapolitan colors.
Okay.
Like I was like color blocked, you know, like vanilla, strawberry, chocolate. And then I wore a football helmet that I put tinfoil on to be a space helmet. but this was also in college. So after like an hour of wearing the helmet, I did not want to wear it anymore.
Right.
'Cause it just kept knocking my skull around. Yeah. So
it's hard to get drinks past the face guard, too.
Yeah.
It's hard to get your buzz on.
Is astronaut ice cream Neapolitan?
Sometimes.
I thought it was just only vanilla for some reason.
For some reason, I feel like I've had the Neapolitan. None of the flavors taste different from each other.
I don't know what astronaut ice cream is.
Oh, it's dehydrated ice cream.
Oh,
and they like sell it to you
like
at science museums.
Astronaut ice cream.
Yeah. Like your saliva is the only thing that is getting it moist.
It's styrofoam basically.
I see.
Been painted a color and then you eat it.
That is a good but you went to Brown, so
yeah.
I think you'd just be one color.
You went to Brown University?
Yeah.
Oh, far out. Good school.
Yeah.
What'd you study there?
Something very made up called art semiotics.
Whoa. That is...
No, this is great. We're looking at a text today that has a lot of different
basically
things.
Media studies. TV and film study. Basically film study.
And you put it to use?
Yeah, in a way.
Yeah.
Like put all that hypertext.
Well, like it's not like they knew that like one day you're like, I guess I'll be doing a podcast in a decade or something.
I feel like probably everybody there has a podcast now.
Yeah. Sure.
I do wonder about that because we had a guest who has a PhD... Bill Hudson, and his mom is like a professor, and I was like, somehow it came up like Guy Branum was more freaked out about knowing Bill Hudson's mom than meeting the guy from Clipping. So it was like it was like I was like, does your mom do podcasts? She's like, nah, she won't even deal with that.
Yeah.
It's just a generation thing maybe.
Sure.
But like I think academics are people that have all the extra words that could go somewhere.
Yes.
Like I got words, I got to put them somewhere.
Yeah,
I
words
got trivia.
And thoughts.
Yeah.
Lots of trivia. What about you, George? What, did you have a favorite costume?
The one I've told people about, and there's a lot of prefacing and a lot of explanation. I was a black Muslim in Oakland, so which did not involve blackface. It was me wearing a suit, red bow tie, and I went to one of the black Muslim restaurants, your black Muslim bakery, bought the Daily Call, their paper.
Oh, yeah.
So I just stood around, and then people were like, why does Asian Pee Wee Herman have a copy of the Final Call? I should have got a bean pie. That was what I should have done to top that off. So I just look like Asian Pee Wee Herman. So that's my black Muslim costume.
That's not bad. I went as gum once.
Gums, gum?
But I tied a shoe to my head and dressed in all pink and... I'm not very creative when it comes to Halloween costumes. It was, I always put my costume, this is what I do every Halloween. I'm not going out. Maybe I'll go out. Okay, I'll go out. Now I need a costume.
Yep.
And I'm going to make something in 10 minutes and then go to a party.
Yeah.
That is how my Halloween usually goes down.
Yeah, the one where it's just what's like, I actually am really proud of the one I did last year, which was Billy Corgan.
Oh.
Oh, I could see that.
Because there's a limited number of bald characters one can do, and we just... looked at a Google image search of Billy Corgan.
Yeah.
And my girlfriend had a bunch of just like blue scarves that had stripes on them.
Right.
So I just basically wore everything that had stripes that she owned. And then I did stand up as Billy Corgan. And I like tried to, I didn't shave my eyebrows, but I like covered them with like glue.
I think it'd be fun to add some Halloween pictures to this podcast.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so I think I might be going as Ken Bone.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, oh, yeah.
There's going to be, I think, maybe thousands of them.
I saw already that there is a sexy Ken Bone costume now.
That's a great additive to all Halloween is the sexy dot,
well,
dot, dot.
My favorite website, there's this website called Yandy.com that just does like the novelty Halloween costumes. Mm-hmm. And I just like look at it all the time because they add new costumes. And they're always like the dumbest yearly. So this year, the big ones are sexy Ken Bone, which is basically like a red halter top sweater and like a mustache and a microphone.
Sure, sure.
And and they have one that's like a sexy version of the Snapchat dog filter. It's like
How do you do that?
Oh, that just puts the dog on your
face. Like a costume. Yeah. It's
which
like...
I remember like Google Hangouts had that as an option. Right. Yeah, that's like old Google Hangouts.
I saw sexy cornfield. Lately, which is amazing.
I don't even understand what that means.
It's a sexy corn piece. It's a short halter top, and it looks like corn. And then it has there's lots of leaves, and then what looks like stalks behind you. So you're not a piece of corn, but cornfield.
Yeah, the things are just like sort of like the meta. Like when someone would be like, "I'm my MySpace top 8," and they'd have a piece of cardboard jutting out and like having extra background elements. That's an overdoing it.
I think the key to a Halloween costume is to pick something that you don't have to explain a million times because the as soon as you walk out there and somebody asks you who you are, you're like, oh no.
Have you ever done a group Halloween costume where you're part of
I did once, like the first year I moved back to LA, I went to a Halloween party where my friend made costumes. She made me a bacon costume and I was bacon. And then my other two friends were egg and toast.
Uh-huh.
And we like showed up at a party and somebody was like, "Hey, breakfast is here."
Oh, nice.
I was like, that feels good to walk into a room and everyone's excited for breakfast.
You got the best one. Bacon's the best one.
Yeah. That is the best one.
It is the best one.
The saltiest.
Also, my hair is kind of like bacon color and texture, so it was good.
I wouldn't say that.
Certainly not texture.
Thing that comes to mind.
Are you Jewish?
Yeah, half. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Whoa, this just took a weird turn.
With the bacon. Anyway, so speaking of Hell House, what a documentary.
Yes.
Now, you guys have both seen this before.
Yes, I saw it when it came out, I think.
In a theater?
2001.
Or?
No, oh, wow. It was like... I rented it.
Yeah, well, actually, I just got mine from the library because what I realized is the company that put out the DVDs is this company, Plexifilm, that was from New York, and I kind of knew a guy who worked there, but they don't exist anymore. So I think a lot of the things that were on Plexifilm, either the rights just went back to the owner, which I think in the case of George Ratliff, the director of Hell House, there's a way to directly watch it on his website and get money to him because, yeah, his company that did the DVDs doesn't exist anymore, and I could only find it at the library.
I just watched it on YouTube a couple of years ago, but now it's not on YouTube anymore. You can see like the trailer, you can see selected scenes, but I thought it was on YouTube and I couldn't find it on YouTube.
I just watched it online somewhere, but I forget where. Mm-hmm. So watched it again.
Yeah. But I remember, like, I don't remember it having a theatrical release anywhere where I was, but I had the DVD, I'd watched the DVD, and there were some good extras on the DVD. There's also, so it came out, I think the copyright of the film is 2001, but I think the DVD came out in 2002.
Got it.
And there was a This American Life story that George Ratliff did shortly, I think in 2002, using the audio from the movies. And the thing that I kind of, they also had a short, which is on the DVD extras, which he did the year before. So in 99, he and the cinematographer went out to Cedar Hill, Texas, because they had heard about this haunted house that had a Columbine room, and they filmed that. So that's like a 19-minute film. And then he took the funding, he showed that as a demo and got funding to do the feature-length film in 2000.
Ah, that's interesting. So that's how that came up. So someone had they speak about it in the documentary that there was a Columbine. The thing about watching this I just watched it again recently, obviously, is that how throwback this documentary is, and that if you watch recent Amanda Knox, the recent stuff, Making a Murder, all that kind of stuff on Netflix, like this doesn't include names. You know, there's
I did notice that.
Dates. There's lots of long scenes and shots. There's not the quick edit. There's not the over hyper soundtrack. You know, It's kind of cool. It's kind of fun to watch. It's like watching one of the older Errol Morris documentaries where they're like, they just don't feed you any information.
Yeah, it's great. It's really, you just hang out with those people and you start to really like them, even though you also feel like they're misguided. It's like they're very empathetic, and especially the dad.
John Cassar, yeah. I started feeling for him a lot.
I love that. Because
it turns out it's like not really a documentary about making a hell house so much as it's a documentary about a guy whose wife left him because of the internet.
Right.
And left him to like take care of these children with special needs, and you understand why he gets so into the Hell House as like his thing that gives him some sort of control in this insane life that he has.
Well, that was one of my questions, was I don't know how involved he was in like the scripting, but there's like a sequence in the Hell House which is mirrors his life, which is a wife running off with some dude she met off the internet.
Yeah.
And that's called I believe the different areas of Hell House have names like family violence. I think that was family violence.
Yes. And some of this is very hard to, I don't remember. I was, of course, a lot younger when it first came out in 2002, so I don't think I was as sensitive of a person then. But now watching it again many years later, I was like hit hard by some of these scenes. I'm sorry, what was his name?
John Cassar.
John Cassar was the dad. Like
the five kids.
He's so cute. And he's
kind of a Ken Bone.
Yeah, yeah, he's so loving and cute, and like when he takes care. So like to catch up some of the listeners, there's a scene about midway through the documentary where we get introduced to him, and he shows him making breakfast for his five kids, I believe he said.
Five kids, yeah.
And then one of his smallest children, maybe not the youngest, I couldn't really tell, but ends up having a seizure.
Yeah. And yeah, he has cerebral palsy.
And it's one of those moments where like some of the better documentaries that the filmmakers seem to be at a time and place where they can catch these either special moments or surreal moments or just like what the fuck moments. And this happened to be kind of all of those, I suppose you could say, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like it really hit me hard. I was like, oh, that poor kid. And then, you know, he comes out of it, the seizure. Mm-hmm. Not there long after, but I was just like, oh my gosh, that's just so tough.
It's a really good sort of, makes you be like, oh yeah, like some people find so much comfort in religion because like look at how horrible this guy's life is, and this is the thing, the only thing that gives him sort of solace.
Oh no, we have a seizure. Yes, I'm being serious, we have a seizure. Okay, sweetheart. Oh, God. Come on, put your hand in this. Come on, God. Come on. Oh, yes. Never mind. Yeah, okay, never mind. He's out of the seizure. Thank you very much. I'm sorry. I spoke the word of God, and you came out of your seizure, son. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
That's a mark of a great documentary, too, is that they leave it up to your own devices. Like, are you going to feel empathetic? Are you going to feel like this is ironic? Are you going to have sympathy? Or are you going to just point your finger and laugh?
Yeah, you really get everything from this one, especially because they do have things in the Hell House, like the, you know, don't get pregnant at a rave and then have an abortion.
Yeah.
It's also, yeah, it's so funny the things that the religious adults are like, we got to warn the kids about raves and ecstasy. And
oh, that's one of my favorite characters in the whole thing, other than John Cassar, who you just kind of feel bad for, is Thaddeus, the rave expert.
Yeah, he is
like the guy who's like the guy. It's kind of like when there is the people try to convert people from being gay to being straight.
Yeah.
He's like the guy's like, I used to be gay, right, and it was like this, and he still clearly loves it.
Right.
And he's like, I have to hide it under a religious banner.
Yeah.
So he's like the expert on rave culture.
Thaddeus took too much Molly.
Yeah.
And really enjoyed himself, then got a little burnt out and was like, all right, like I'm gonna go and hit some religion for a little bit. But yeah, he enjoys talking about it.
Yeah.
And there is sort of like that Waiting for Guffman thing about it of like, we're putting on a show and everybody in town is involved.
Mm-hmm. I just watched Mascots last night. I haven't seen
it yet.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's also it brings back the Christopher Guest character from Waiting for Guffman.
Oh yeah,
I didn't
Corky
realize that was gonna happen. Yeah, Corky makes an appearance.
Jeez,
so it's kind of a sequel, but it's not really. But yeah, it is. I felt that too. I felt that same thing of like, even though ideologically I do not agree with anything they're doing, you can't help but
get swept
into that
up.
You're going to put on a show.
Hell House Fever.
Totally.
Yeah, and that's kind of what that particular kind of section of Christianity or arm or bizarre wing of Christianity does. That kind of Pentecostal, evangelical, free denomination.
Which you were saying you have some experience with.
Oh, Lord, do I have experience with that.
Tell us about it. We're a couple of agnostic Californians.
I am pretty agnostic. Yeah. I didn't grow up with this stuff.
I got dipped deep into the spiritual waters of Pentecostal churches. My dad and my stepmother were born-again Christians who took it to the nth degree. We went to a free denominational Pentecostal church where you spoke in tongues and you exalted to the Lord through song and prayer. And it was, as a child, you get swept up into it because kind of what they're trying to do, it's like most of the adults that are there are there because they were ex-drug users or alcoholics, and that's why they called born again, because they fucked up at some point in their life, and they're like, oh shit, the only way for me to feel better about myself is to find the Lord.
Oh, I fucked up. Jeez.
Yeah, well, there you go.
There's an answer.
Yeah, there is an answer, George. Remember,
all the times that you were denied Christ in your life.
Take this pamphlet.
So when you spoke in tongues, okay, mm-hmm. That scene was very confusing to me. I've seen other footage of people speaking in tongues. Did you feel like you just were like improv-ing? You're just yes-anding what was happening?
Yeah. For me, it was like taking a UCB class.
Yeah.
And less expensive. I was never a believer. I was never a full-on Christian kid. I was always agnostic, always skeptical, because I just thought it was just nonsense. It just seemed nonsense to me, and I also saw a lot of hypocrisy. And I was just like, how can you be a Christian on Sunday alone? Monday through Saturday, you're a complete asshole. And on Sundays, you're a Christian. That doesn't make any goddamn sense. But yeah, I would do, just to make my dad happy, or I'd get hit with a hand in church if I didn't try to participate in some way. So yeah, you're like, you know, you just do that bullshit, and you look like you're full of the Lord, you know.
Did you think about that when you were watching Hell House?
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, I went to our version. We had our version of this and other kinds of, you know, they also have camps that they do. You guys saw Jesus Camp?
Yes.
Yeah.
That documentary?
Yeah,
I went to one of those.
Yeah.
Yeah. Camp Calvary in Michigan. I went to a Jesus camp. And yeah, so watching this brought back a lot of moments where I'm like, ugh, and oh no, and all the bad mustaches. I don't know what it is about Christian guys.
Oh, yeah.
So many bad mustaches.
Our main, the guy who opens it all up is Tim Ferguson, who's like leading the Hell House.
What a perfect name for that guy, too.
Yeah. I made a little drawing of him right here.
Oh, you did? That's really good.
That's accurate.
We'll have to get a picture of that.
Do you think it's like that they want to do a haunted house, but they're like, we can't do something so satanic? So we're going to do like a haunted house that's not, that's like anti...
Not fun?
Yeah, I don't know. It seems kind of fun.
It does still seem fun. I think that's, to your point,
there's just
a lesson in it. Yeah, there's a lot of people that...
I don't want lessons in my haunted house.
Well, I think actually like this came up in the This American Life story. He was like, no one wanted to play the good Christian. everyone wanted to play
the sinner,
a drug user, a murderer. Yeah, they wanted to play the sinners because that's fun.
Yeah,
it's like, yeah, it's more fun to play the Joker.
Yeah,
always. But
well, and there's a scene where they're showing the audition notice of who got what role. And they're all just like, yes, I got the abortion lady.
Yeah.
You know?
Will, this is a good time to put that clip in there because those are some amazing.
Yeah.
There's so many good quotes in this movie.
It's all quotes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Will, our engineer, should not have a problem dropping in quotes from this.
I like there was Thaddeus has a million quotes just on his own, but then just like, I get to play the abortion girl. Like,
yeah.
That's like the cheery, the response.
Yeah, she's very happy. And then the guy who said, corny lines, makeups, and soundtracks.
But they are so repressed that this does seem like the room springa, right? It's like the walkabout in a way. Like, this, they're so repressed. The only way they get to act out these things is just like their idea of everyday devil, which is also hilarious. Like, their idea of what evil is and what is a cult in the beginning is great.
Well, we were talking about this right before we started recording, but Jack Chick just died.
Oh, yeah.
Of the Chick Tracks, which are these like 3-panel comics, sometimes longer. Mm-hmm. But sort of like you'd get them and they're these little booklets.
Like black and red usually or something like that. Yeah.
Free handed out, you know, and I think it's like supposed to be that like a kid will be like, oh, a comic. And then you're like reading it and you're like, wait a minute, this is a Jesus comic.
Yeah.
But so many of them involve the occult, and those are a lot of people's favorites. And there were a lot of like 80s kind of satanic panic ones specifically. Mm-hmm. And there's one that goes around a lot that's about like Dungeons and Dragons. That's like, don't play Dungeons and Dragons because it is, you know, satanic.
It leads to Stranger Things.
Yeah. And, you know, don't do Ouija board because like your spirits.
There was a weird thing that happened in the 80s with in the mid to southern states, Oklahoma, Texas, Arkansas, of the whole cult. Have you seen West Memphis 3?
That
documentary? Mm-hmm. I mean, that perfectly captures the fright that people had. I mean, I remember in the, like, FBI agents would be like, be careful. Like, this cult's gonna, the cult thing was a big deal in that time. As a matter of fact, at one point, your boy Tim talked about how there was a warlock.
Oh, I do love that line too. When they're building the thing.
Yeah.
And like, one of the workers is like, there should be white in this occult scene, right? He's like, well, a couple years ago, we just cut to the clip. The warlock, he's like, oh, warlock said that's not accurate. So I like it, reminded me of that Mr. Show sketch. Do you know that one where it's like the Satanists that are like looking at, like,
oh,
I don't
yeah.
like these sloppy devils that you have. And then the Roman Catholic like bishop comes out and like, we agree, the devil needs to be treated seriously.
Yeah.
It's like they're both invested in this idea of the devil.
Right.
And there was. Yeah, that was a really good scene about that. And there's also a really good timing of that in the editing because there's just a kid who's watching the interaction and his tape measure just flops down flaccidly.
Yeah, there's a couple jokes in there that I thought were pretty funny.
I think that going back to what you were saying about that, like George Ratliff doesn't do a narration. He just lets people talk to the camera and really just like, that's the thing where it's like, it could be, you could, I think if you wanted to look at this as like being a satirical thing or a Guffman type thing that is there. If you were one of these people, I don't know if you would be like, I was totally being made fun of because they got to say, they basically, he gives them the room to spout their worldview and that we're kind of living in their worldview.
Absolutely.
And you can see like who might start to get skeptical at a certain point. And I think, for somebody who didn't grow up religious at all, it's maybe easier to watch these things and just be like, oh, these, you know, these people, it's so like sweet almost that they're so invested in this. Because it also just seems like sort of maybe the only thing in town to do.
Oh, yeah. Also in that occult scene, there is like their occult room. They have a 666. And then they seem to think that a Star of David is a pentagram.
That's
which is
the
either
best.
They don't know that penta means five, which is very likely.
Yeah.
Or they just confuse Judaism with Satan. I don't know.
Wow. That pentagram. It's like someone doesn't know how to draw. Mm-hmm. That is very funny. I forgot about that.
Or maybe
that,
they're like, if you draw a pentagram, something will happen.
Yeah. Right. So just draw.
A door will open in the wall. I was also bringing up right before we started talking live about this other documentary.
Oh, yeah.
That's sort of Hell House adjacent that was on Netflix a little while ago called The American Scream. that I recommend to everybody, because it is another sort of like slice of life haunted house documentary. And it takes place in Massachusetts, and it's like a profile of, I think it's three different haunted houses in sort of just like the Massachusetts suburbs. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember who the third person is, but I remember the two of them very well. One of them is a guy who is obsessed with building the best haunted house every year. And it's like a home haunted house. It's not like, you know, amusement park. It's like he turns his basement into a walkthrough, and he builds all this stuff in the yard, and he's like, this is his whole life, is that he wants to like be the guy, the haunted house guy. And then you find out like halfway through the documentary that he was raised super religious and was never allowed to have Halloween. But it turns into this kind of like The Shining thing, where he's like so obsessed with building the haunted house, and he's like promised his kids he'd build them a tree house, but he just like doesn't do that. He just starts working on the haunted house, and they're like, Dad, like, I thought you were gonna work on our thing. And he's like, leave me alone, kids. I gotta build the house. He gets so obsessed. And then there's another haunted house built by like a father and son, mm-hmm. who are maybe mentally ill. It's not really both clarified. They seem maybe like both a little, mm-hmm. something is a little like, but they are kind of like Grey Gardens. It's like they're also just this very codependent, like father and son who like only talk to each other, really. And they are just like obsessed with building this haunted house.
American Scream.
Wow.
Yeah, it is.
I want to check that
it's
out.
It's great. And it's another thing where you're kind of like, this could just be like really mean about these people's lives. Right. But you really feel sort of like, especially with the Shining type dad, you're just like, these kids, these poor kids, now they're gonna hate Halloween.
Yeah, right.
And like pass that on to their kids, who will then love Halloween.
And you were saying before that you just like haunted houses in general.
I love haunted houses, and LA is like a big home haunted house place.
I was gonna mention, I have a friend of mine who has a vice cooler, my old bandmate, he has a Instagram account, Haunts of LA.
Oh, which that's is who just, runs it?
Yeah. Have you been looking at Haunts
of LA? I
looked at
it. It followed me back, and I felt very excited to be followed by a haunted house. Yeah, I did.
They just Instagram the exteriors of the haunted houses. And yeah. Kinda, I don't know if they really describe what's inside, but it's almost like a rating Instagram site.
Now, are these haunted houses that are specifically haunted houses, or it's just spooky homes?
Some of them are just spooky facades, mm-hmm. spooky decorated yards.
I went with Vice one year, and we found the one where like someone, like people that every year they extend their garage out to make an extra maze and they get super into it. Like there's like a crashed UFO in their lawn, that kind of thing.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And they're all over like suburban parts of LA.
They're all over the valley, which is where I'm from. There's a lot of like just people also who work in film and who work in production.
Oh, cool.
And
we should take a tour.
Yeah.
I would love to.
Well, there's a guy, I think it's in Woodland Hills, there's a guy who does like one every year that's, you know, not bloody. It's like for kids, kind of. Mm-hmm. It's more like the Disneyland haunted house.
So no abortions?
No abortions. I also listened to, I was on a road trip recently, and I listened to like five podcasts about the making of the Disneyland haunted house.
Oh, like the, right. The one.
The Haunted Mansion.
Which I love that final scene where you got a ghost in your,
in your
cart with you.
That's what they talked about a lot. They talked about how the Haunted Mansion was like 20 years in the making, because it was like one of the first things Walt Disney thought should be in Disneyland. But they were like, we'll get to it later after we like do this other stuff. So they put it up in the park in like 1969. Mm-hmm. But then it just like sat in the park, and it wasn't a ride yet for years.
Oh, weird.
Before they like put out an announcement like coming soon, and then it didn't actually get finished until after Walt Disney was dead.
And then the first rider died.
Well, the big problem was that there was like an internal division between people on the Imagineers who wanted it to be funny and Imagineers who wanted it to be scary. Mm-hmm. And so they like kind of went back and forth as to whether it should be like a zany haunted house or whether it should be like genuinely scary.
Right.
And they ended up sort of making it half and half, so that the first half of it is kind of more like atmospheric and spooky, and then the second half is all just like character ghosts.
Right.
How often do you go to Disneyland?
Well,
this is leading into like, is this an area of extreme research for you?
Not anymore, but I worked, when I was working at Grantland, I was a Disney employee technically, so I ended up getting the pass, the Silver
Viacom?
Pass. No, that's where I work now. It's at Viacom. This was like ESPN is owned by Disney ABC, so I had a magic golden ticket to Disneyland for 2 years, and I went as much as I humanly could, more than maybe is healthy.
Right.
And I miss it.
Let me ask you guys, you're both skeptic agnostics. Either are you two atheists?
I would lean more that agnostic, agnostic slash atheist.
Do you believe in ghosts, either of you, Molly?
Well,
George,
you know, I don't believe in ghosts, but I am half Irish Catholic, so I definitely feel bad if I do something bad and believe in like a little bit of, you know, I don't know. I would be.
Well, so you're talking about like Ten Commandments kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
Or the Catholic guilt exists?
It's Catholic guilt. I wouldn't like take something from a sacred site, you know? Yeah. I would be afraid to do that.
That would suck. Yeah. But do you believe in ghosts, though? Have you seen a ghost? Do you believe in ghosts?
I haven't seen a ghost, but I like want to believe in ghosts. Uh-huh. I don't know that I do, but I you know, I like spooky things.
Yeah. Spooky things are cool.
I may have talked about this already, but we stayed at a haunted hotel in Grass Valley that is known for, like, my friend works there, and she's like, oh yeah, everyone who's worked here has seen like an apparition with like only a torso, things like that.
Whoa.
Really creepy things. And so we came back to the hotel pretty late at night, not that late, like 1 a.m. or something, and I just felt a chill immediately walking in, maybe because I'd psyched myself up so much about this place is haunted, but it just like in the room, it just felt like bone chilling.
Yeah.
And then we found dental floss on the floor of the bathroom. So I think maybe just bad housekeeping.
That could
be. But we got a discount either way. Up top.
Or a ghost who is flossing.
Or a flossing ghost, exactly.
A flossing ghost? Well, ghost with good teeth. You never know. I feel like if I should have seen a ghost by now. I grew up in an extremely big old house called the Dowell House. It had a name.
And it's called the Dowell House?
Dowell?
D-O-L-L. Dowell House, which should have a creepy old ghost woman living
creepy
there.
Creepy doll, a haunted doll.
It was built in like 1906, and it used to be the home of this guy who had a brewery, the Dowell Brewery. And it was giant, and it was a Victorian, and it should have had a ghost. And then the apartment I live in San Francisco, the original owner was hacked to pieces and murdered in the hallway of my old apartment. But yet, no ghosts. I haven't seen a ghost. I've had friends and ex-girlfriends who have been like, oh, I saw something in the hallway or something, but like, I've never.
Yeah, I think there being a murder in your building might
helps kind of jog something.
Oh my gosh, do you know where we are?
Where are we?
A block away on Franklin is the house that belongs to one of the main suspects in the Black Dahlia murder.
Oh, want to hear something sweet?
Yes.
I have been there.
Oh, you've been right around Franklin.
I've been
crazy
on that
house.
It is.
Do people live there?
It
has a name. I talked to Eric Charles Nielsen about this.
It is. It's called the Jaws House.
Okay.
By a lot of people because it kind of looks like a shark.
Yes.
Mouth is at the top of it. I was actually thinking that we were right close to it because
it's right around the corner.
Telling my friend about it, how I had been there, and I was like, maybe I'll drive past it after this podcast to take a picture of
it. Walk right there
from a spooky Instagram.
Let's back up a little bit now because a lot of people don't know what the Black Dahlia murder is.
Black Dahlia is a big Los Angeles murder. It is a starlet named Elizabeth Short who was hacked to pieces and
bisected
in a way that some people think was like only a doctor could have done it. So this guy George Hodel.
Yeah.
Who lived at the... I'm the right person to bring this up.
This is perfect, yeah.
This was not planned, by the way.
This is like a fairly recent theory, I feel like. That it was him. I think it was maybe him because he also was like, he molested his daughter. He's maybe the person that like the John Huston character in Chinatown was based on, I even heard. That's just me connecting all the things in my mind. But I went there as a kid because my brother had a friend who lived there, and he had a sleepover there.
A sleepover?
If only you could have seen George's face.
In the Jaws House. It's designed by Frank Lloyd Wright's son.
Okay.
So it kind of looks like a fake, Frank Lloyd Wright Jr., I believe is his name. And it looks like a fake Frank Lloyd Wright kind of thing. Like somebody knocking off a Frank Lloyd Wright. But that's because it's his kid.
Yeah.
But it's also historic. And I went there when we picked up my brother from this kid's house. Mm-hmm. And I remember being like, wow, what a fucking spooky house. Because it's like... got a big outdoor patio sort of in the middle of the house. Mm-hmm. There's like the pool is sort of like there's like an outdoor.
There's a website for the house. We should include in the show notes. I know there's a website for this house explaining the architecture.
And so I remember my brother had said like, oh, it's really creepy because when you go to the bathroom, you have to like walk across this outdoor patio past the pool to like get to the other part of the house. And I remembered all of this like very vividly from picking him up from this house because my parents, I think, also just knew it was like a historic house and were excited to see it. And then when this story came out like decades later that it was maybe the site of the Black Dahlia murder.
Wow.
I didn't hear that it was a site of the murder. I just thought where the guy lived.
Some people think it was there.
And then she dumped her somewhere else.
Yeah, that he like brought her there.
So
then, I was like, don't watch the movie.
Yeah. No, but for some reason, it was like I've watched something like a show about conspiracies where they got into that and they talked about the reason they think that he was never prosecuted or
he even went to Asia, a suspect. Right.
Maybe. Wow. But I think the main thing was that he was like a Hollywood doctor.
Oh.
So he was like a fixer and he was in with all the studio chiefs and he was like the person they would call. Right. You know,
someone had too much morphine.
Yeah, I think he did like a
character in that Coen Brothers.
Exactly like that. I think he did a lot of like secret abortions for starlets who weren't supposed to be pregnant. And so he was kind of like too powerful.
I say on Halloween, the three of us break in at midnight.
Great idea.
With flashlights.
It's weird that your brother was just friends with someone who lived there.
Yeah.
Like a child who didn't know any of that stuff.
But it was crazy because when that stuff came out, I was like, I have this vivid memory of seeing this house. And then I looked at a picture of it and I was like, oh, it does look exactly like I remember. Like that wasn't an implanted memory that I have, you know. And maybe I'm like retconning it, like thinking like, oh, I knew then it was so creepy and a murder house. But I think it was just kind of creepy
because
it was like a house made of concrete blocks and it's kind of just has a spooky energy.
Right.
As a lot of sort of things that are old for Los Angeles do.
Yeah, for sure.
Very occult.
What? This is a weird segue, but back to the doc, which is the segue. I thought it was kind of cool that they called it The Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That was the 10th year, and that was the name was Walking Dead.
Yeah, and last night was the premiere of the season 7 of The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Do you guys watch The Walking Dead?
Yeah.
I actually don't.
Yeah.
It stressed me out too much.
It stressed me out that other people were so stressed out by it. they're fast zombies?
I think they're pretty fast zombies.
They're pretty fast zombies.
I don't like the fast zombie.
They're not like...
Weirdly, I'm not that crazy about zombies compared to other...
Did you like the old Romero, like Dawn of the Dead?
Those are super scary.
Because they walk slower?
Just because it's like a scary ass, like the first one, The Living Dead, is like legitimately scary.
Right.
It also has a black lead, which is really cool. You know, just it's like an indie movie.
Right.
You know, it's not like a... I don't know.
It's a mumblecore. It's the first mumblecore.
It kind of is. It's like you're just following this guy around. Right. I remember I saw it at like a Halloween carnival at like my friend's high school, you know, and was like really creeped out by it. And then we did like a creepy haunted house at this high school that was in, because it's an LA high school, it had an underground parking garage. And so they turned the underground parking garage. Oh.
Underground parking garages are like the scariest.
Oh, they're scariest place ever. Especially if you're a woman.
Yeah, sure. They're always really hot and claustrophobic.
Yeah, they're scary anyway. So when you add people jumping out at you, it's like
scene in a movie where someone's like walking to their car alone. Yeah.
It's like I feel like those Living Dead movies got like less scary as they went on.
Uh-huh.
But I love Dawn of the Dead, the one in the mall.
That's the one that's my favorite. Too.
Yeah. I love horror movies that take place in malls, just in general.
There
and it's
was
so 80s because it's such an... Oh, I love Career Opportunities. Career Opportunities is
not
like
technically a horror movie.
The fantasy version, because it's like my dream to live in a Target.
That's Frank Whaley, right?
Yeah.
He's on Luke Cage. I was like,
really?
What? Who took Frank Whaley's face and put it in a microwave? It was Frank Whaley, just aging.
Oh. All right. So
I just want to talk about Career Opportunities for one more second.
Yeah,
I just love Career Opportunities because I feel like it's like a realistic Ferris Bueller where you're like, what if instead of being the most popular kid in school, Ferris Bueller was like a pariah that everybody thinks is a compulsive liar? And then he like does one thing and nobody believes him.
Oh, right.
And that thing is to live in a Target, which is the plot of Career Opportunities.
Which is also the plot of like, isn't that what's the Mixed Up Files of Basil.
Yes, Frank that's Weiler, in a museum.
They live in a museum.
Yeah,
that I remember loving that as a kid. The idea of living in a museum.
Oh yeah,
something about like, the target.
I'm gonna sleep in King Henry sheets. You mentioning there being only the rarity of having a black lead in Night of the Living Dead reminds me of how racist this church is.
Oh, so racist. Which that's is the like, thing. It's like you start to like these people, and then they do something, and you're like, "Ooh, I do not like these people."
Yeah. That's kind of what Christians are all about.
Yeah.
Well, Tim Ferguson straight up just says like, oh, so we're this denomination of Pentecostals, and we actually, there used to be black bishops in this denomination, but some people weren't into it, and so we created this religion. And then I'm like, why is there any people of color in any of these hell houses? Yeah. There's the other guy who is the Spanish teacher, John Michael, I believe is his church name, or Senior Brajas is his teaching name, because there's also Trinity Church and a Trinity School. We didn't even get into the fact that Trinity Church is the place that kind of is known as the originator of the concept of the Hell House.
You're right. Yes.
And even though I guess I was seeing that like back in 72, Jerry Falwell had something called the Scare Mare, which I'm sure was the same idea.
It was so like technology. We're going to make something entertaining. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We're going to like exploit your desire for pleasure and then like turn it on you.
Yeah. Of
which
course.
Is like, and also like
still it's pleasurable.
Well, there's the thing about like, it's just like Christian rock.
Yeah.
It's just not as good as the other stuff.
Right.
It's the all Christian culture, which is trying to psych you out and then give you your medicine at the end. Like, I feel like there is, like, I'm sure Christian artists that I would like on the merit of their art itself, but people that use it as, like, basically, like, a Trojan horse for ideology, it never is, like, as good as the other thing.
Like Stryper.
Stryper, exactly.
Yeah. Or Amy Mann.
Yeah. So there's that element. But yeah, like the racism is very strange. But I was going to say that character, the one Latino character, and then he always is playing like what someone in North Texas's idea of a scary person of color is.
Yeah.
Like he's shooting a white girl and like selling drugs.
Right. Yeah. Because he's Hispanic.
Yeah.
So that's, and also like, you know, this is, they filmed this in 1999, 2000. So like,
oh my God, I was thinking about like, before 9/11, like what was the next year of Hell House like?
Oh God, yeah.
Like 2001's Hell House? That had to be awful.
Well, and also the, I mean, boy, when you look back now with the idea of like the sexism and just the way they treated
homophobia,
but females too in this.
Yes.
Like when someone brings up Columbine, he's like, yeah, that's good to go. And they're like, and then two girls like kissing and hitting on each other. He's like, oh, fuck that.
Yeah.
No, we're not going to do any of that.
I wish you didn't have to see the things you're going to see. I wish our culture wasn't the way that it is. And we show the things every day in TV and movies and videos. But what you're going to see in Hell House is a reality check, or reinterpret the images. And I really feel it's our responsibility as the church to warn our culture like a watchman warning someone of danger. And it's my responsibility and the church's responsibility, and I believe even others' responsibility, to warn them of the coming danger and what our culture is facing. If I don't do that, then the blood is not only on your hands for your sins, but it's also on my head and my hands for your sins as well.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
The girl who, I can't remember what scene she's in, but she is, she goes on a date and she puts a plastic bag over her hair.
Yeah.
The guy she's dating, it's in the DVD extras. He's one of the Columbine kids from the year before.
Oh,
the kid with the giant Jenko pants.
Yeah.
Which is another
and spiky.
This is a very good time capsule of 2000. Like also
of what
the website that John Cassar builds.
Yeah.
Just like there is blinking cat eyes and a constant flame.
Come
to Angel Fire.
Click
ironically.
Enter here.
Yeah.
What people thought was very scary. I just wrote a thing about nu metal.
Oh, did you?
For MTV. Mm-hmm. I wrote about Korn.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of Fields of Korn, yeah.
Yeah, and I was just sort of talking about like what people thought was scary right before 9/11 and mm-hmm. what kind of like teenage chick tracks type, you know, hysteria.
Well, for example.
Well, just for with Korn. Nu metal, that people were like frightened by nu metal, that it was like, satanic and...
People thought Korn, the band, was satanic?
Well, people thought just like nu metal was like the scary, like, don't let your kids get into this music or, you know, their
was
lives.
Was it the backwards K that freaked people out?
Yeah, it was probably the backwards K.
It's like the basic fear.
It was a backwards R.
Yeah. Oh, was that?
It's a front-facing K.
Oh, okay. But I knew there was a backwards something in there.
Backwards K. But there it was like the Woodstock 99, which was legit fucked up.
Legitimately frightening.
In 99,
why?
Obviously.
Because everybody...
People got raped
and there were people started setting fires.
And there was no water.
Remember, there was no water.
That whole thing?
Yeah.
Like, you couldn't get water. Yeah.
This also reminds me of... This came up in conversation last night, and I definitely want to do an episode about it, but do you know about Memorial Day 2000?
No.
Do you know about Memorial Day
2000?
It's like footage of... It's supposed to be found footage of these people's vacation in Michigan in Memorial Day 2000.
Oh, yes.
I showed you this clip. I'll embed it. I think, like, I would love to do a live one about this because it's really people that never wanted this footage to get out. Just people behaving like idiots. And it's something you're saying about, like, the Woodstock 99-ness of it was also like, oh, this is who elected George Bush.
Right.
This is like kind of like
and
how
I
it felt to
grew
see
up
that.
Just miles from there where that video was shot. That's right. I looked at that.
Also, you have to send it to you. Check it out.
So, Molly, what is hell to you?
What is hell to me? The Dallas airport.
I've never been.
Oh, God. I've only been to Dallas.
Why are you going to Dallas all the time?
I don't. It's just a big connector, big connection place. I just was trapped there for like... You know, one of those things where your flight keeps getting delayed and you're just like, we're trapped here forever. And they do that kind of like Vegas casino thing where they try to make it so like you never have to leave the building for anything. Like you can't go outside and all you want to do is be outside.
Get air, fresh
air.
For
any reason. Yeah. So it's just like weird levels of like, and there's like weird art installations and stuff. And it's a giant maze and there's a tram between all the terminals.
Right.
And
I hate trams.
We kept having to like go to the, you know, like the flight would get delayed to a different terminal and then we'd have to go to the other terminal. And just a horrible place that really kills your spirit.
Yeah.
And I mean, maybe that's more like purgatory.
I was going to say, that does sound more like the moving around parts.
Yeah. But maybe I feel like purgatory is like very what I would think hell would be like,
be
just like waiting.
Stuck,
yeah.
Right. Waiting for something. How about you, George?
I was going to say, I feel like LA does feel a little bit like hell to
yes,
me.
Yes, it's hot.
Maybe, as I was saying, I just got back from Portland and that felt like just very Hobbit land.
You said it was like white heaven.
It's like white
heaven for white people.
It is.
But isn't that kind of like
things.
A special kind of hell where you like look around and you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah,
there's
so many hiking boots.
I did do a comedy show where there were several men with beards and beanies, and I could not tell audience members and comics apart at a certain point. So that's
flannel.
A legit stereotype, but still, there's something very like. A little bit mystical feeling about that. LA, I do like that LA has everything. The weather has been very hard to deal with. And I guess just maybe my own ego has taken such a hit in this town that it feels like hell in that way.
Right.
But that's just me. But I was going to say...
Well, that's personal hell. Yeah.
Supposedly, the Denver airport has all these conspiracies about it. Do you know about the Denver airport? Yeah. We talked about it with Bill Hudson on that episode.
I really feel strong that hell might be an airport. Yeah. And maybe like which airport is up for grabs, but what's up with the Denver airport?
Just apparently really bad design.
Well, yeah.
And like possible conspiracies about like what it looks like from the outside. Like it's signaling the Illuminati or something.
And it was built on ancient burial grounds. Well, and there's also artwork apparently that's in the Denver airport that has different codes and some horse, I guess, some installation.
Oh, yeah, some horse sculpture. Yeah,
that's a giant horse sculpture.
We should go with there with Bill sometime and just talk about, and we should go with you to the Dallas airport.
Yeah, that's
I want to go to the Denver airport now.
Yeah, we should do a special on that. Yeah, no, what about you, Paco? What's hell to you?
Oh, man, I have so many hell scenarios. For me, mostly sitting behind someone who's not turning right when they can. That, to me, is personal hell. I just want to kill them.
Oh, yeah.
That, to me, is just...
Actually, driving in L.A. has made me feel the most crazy of
anything. Oh, man.
See, that's funny, because I feel like driving in the Bay Area is, like, so much worse.
Well, you grew up here.
It's true. Yeah, and you grew up in...
San Jose. And I was in Oakland forever. And, like, it's just, like, there wouldn't be that many cars. There are people doing crazy shit off Mandela in Oakland now. There are people ghost riding, I'm sure. But
ghost
just
riding
is
heavenly.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe heaven is like a bunch of people ghost riding.
That's true. Well, let's talk about
the Holy Ghost riding.
Let's talk about the audition process.
Oh yeah, the auditioning for Hell House.
I mean, that is the most waiting for Guffman-y part.
It really is.
People are really excited and they want to get the good parts, and the good parts are like the girl who goes crazy from having sex at a rave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then getting pregnant and then having an abortion. And then, like, Satan comes out and is like, ha ha ha, you did what I wanted.
and the black lights in the rave scene and, like, the graffiti in the rave scene. Yeah.
But the specific audition process scene where the three people, I guess, producer, director, and assistant stage manager or something are waiting for people to do their scenes. And there's so much overacting. That's awesome, I guess, my personal
Well,
hell, too.
We both go to auditions all the time, and they're terrible.
They're horrible, and I love the close-ups. They don't use names in this, so I don't know the guy's name, but they keep doing the close-up of the director guy and his look of just, like, horror.
Oh, Tim Ferguson?
Tim Ferguson. He's the red-haired guy.
Oh, the L. Ron Hubbard-looking dude.
Yeah, the L. Ron Hubbard-looking guy. Yeah, they would keep doing a close-up on him, and he's just so dissatisfied with the auditioners.
Yeah, it's that kind of, like, tiny amount of power thing too, where you're like, this hierarchy is like so real to all these people.
Yeah,
it really is. Yeah, the audition scenes. Yeah, I was thinking about like how it made me realize that I don't think I know how to act any more than any of these kids do. Right. And the way that they act is there's a lot of this very nasal style of like, oh no, the devil said that I couldn't do this. Like, and they all kind of go the same direction with it. John Cassar's daughter, Alex Alexander, ends up being, I think, the abortion girl.
She is the abortion girl. She got the role that she wanted.
Her audition was great.
It was good.
Watching that, I'm like, oh, that's legit she's good for that role.
Yeah.
And then they even have this discussion like, was it spiritual enough?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, come on, like, that's really any of the guiding principle for
it. I know.
It's kind of supposed to be the overt guiding principle, but it's not.
I also like, they're like, well, we give the roles to people who show up to church a lot and show a lot of spirit. And, you know, it's like,
so much politics.
There is a lot of politics.
Theater politics.
Theater, baby.
I also love, we haven't talked about Bill Humphrey yet, who is the security guard, the cop for Christ.
Yeah.
And when we talk about gun safety, oh, we didn't even get into this. So he's actually the gun safety guy because they use real guns. Yeah. They use real guns in the Columbine scene.
Yes.
I'm putting in the clapping emojis for all of this.
Because it's insane.
It's nuts. Yeah. And
because it's also right after Columbine.
Right.
Just two years after Columbine.
And they give him blanks, and you can still kill yourself with a blank.
In the episode of Conspiracy, the conspiracy show that also had the Black Dahlia thing, there was also a whole thing about whether Brandon Lee's death was part of a greater conspiracy involving the death of Bruce Lee, which I had never heard before. I had never heard that Bruce Lee's death was a conspiracy. I didn't know anything about it, and now I know that There are people who think that he was killed by the Chinese mafia.
You're not hanging out on Reddit? Is
that like, no, yeah, I just didn't know. Are, I mean, yeah. I totally am hanging on Reddit. Yeah. So I was just like, how did this pass me by? Like, I knew that there's the idea that, like, Brandon Lee, that it was like fate and a curse of some kind. But right. I did not know there was actually...
Yeah,
this idea that that they like tried to extort money from Bruce Lee or something.
I had thought I heard it was basically like the people that were upset he was sharing the secrets of the East. Uh-huh. Some triads. Yes. Were
I heard I what this documentary claimed was that it was like he went to make movies in China because the American film industry was so racist. Mm-hmm. They didn't understand.
Well, that's true.
That's true.
They didn't, Kung Fu,
they didn't
TV
know what
show.
A star he was yeah. after Kung Fu. So he went and made movies in China, but that apparently the Chinese film industry was all mobbed up. And so they yeah. wanted him to pay some kind of like tax.
Yeah, you want protection. You're going to come play in our playground. You're going to pay.
And they came after Brandon.
That was the sort of less believable part was that, you know, they wanted to ensure that everyone knew.
Yeah.
Right.
But again, it was like crazy because they did like a reenactment of how the bullet would have gotten. Because it was the thing, it was like maybe they did use a blank, but there was like a little bit of gunpowder in it or something that was like lodged in the gun. I don't really know how guns work, so I didn't fully understand it. But it was like they did this experiment where it was like, oh, we used like to show that it was just a total fluke in some way. Uh-huh. It wasn't like they used a real bullet by mistake. It was like they did use a blank, but because the gun had some gunpowder like in it somehow became a live bullet.
Yeah, that one. I wanted to seg into something that does relate to haunted houses and a real story from last year, which is a haunted house called Frightland in Delaware, where an off-duty police officer wanted to bring a loaded weapon into the haunted house.
Oh, no. God, you were talking about this.
And so then the guy complained on Facebook. Then he took back his complaint because he's like, okay, I respect their private company decision to do that. But then a bunch of gun nuts were like, I should be able to bring a gun into a haunted house if I want, which is a terrible ghost comes out, I gotta shoot it.
I gotta shoot that spirit down.
I cannot think of a worse idea. Do they think Al-Qaeda is going to attack the Delaware Frightland?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
you know what? They probably do think that. That's the really fucked up part. They're like, we're the big target because we've got the greatest haunted house in all of Delaware.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's insane.
Yeah, can you imagine?
No. Well, yes. Well, what am I saying? Of course I can.
Yeah, and also, like, I've been at haunted houses where there's just a guy with a chainsaw coming at you out of the dark.
I don't
dark.
Go to those kind because they freak me out too bad. I like your kind of haunted mansion Disneyland more like spooky, less about like somebody getting in your face with a fake chainsaw.
David S. Pumpkin.
Have you been to like a haunted house where there's like real potential physical harm?
Have you guys been to Knott's Scary Farm?
Never not scary.
Okay, Knott's Scary Farm.
That's a great name.
Is the best, and it's like where you go as a young teenager to like try and meet other young teenagers that aren't in your immediate social circle.
Yeah.
But I guess they invented the whole people jumping out at you thing.
Oh.
And the origin story was that they had some dark ride where for Halloween the ride employee, just to entertain himself, started jumping out at people at the end of the ride.
Uh-oh.
And everybody loved it so much that they were like, we should do more of this. And we should have just people just jumping out at you, and that's the whole thing. And they like invented what is now a thing at every theme park.
And it was Steve Martin.
Yeah. I do. There are some photos of a scary house in the East somewhere, but they have these like freeze frames of people's scary.
I love that.
Those are great. Those
genuine responses.
Yeah.
There's like a meme of like people being like,
ugh. Yeah, it's called like, check out these scared people. And then they all look really fucking scared.
I to get back to the documentary, so like what they do set up, and it seems fairly sophisticated, the technology they use in 2001 for this haunted house. They have a control room, they have monitors, each room seems to have cameras, they have walkie-talkies.
Oh, they have a disc man for the music in one of the rooms, because when they're like, the music's, you're too far ahead in the music, you gotta turn it back, and it's just a disc man, like rewind.
And but then, when I saw that 12,000 people went through it at $7 a head, like they're making... That's a pretty sweet little profit there.
Yeah. Well, also, they They built all of that stuff from on an empty lot, I guess. Every year they rebuild it. They don't even start with the same housing structure.
Yeah.
They were starting to build it in like September.
Right. Yeah. Which is, you know, you got to give them credit for that.
Yeah, you got to have recessed rooms to like have people underneath.
Yeah, I like all the stagecraft aspect of it.
Yeah, there's legit stuff to learn from this.
Yeah, just absolutely.
Not what I think they wanted us to learn.
It just seemed like so many people. It looks so cramped and hot. Mm-hmm. Like,
haunted houses are
it's
like.
It's Texas,
though.
Too.
Yeah. There is, though, the scene where the girl slices her wrist after the date rape, and they cut to a group of black girls, and some of their reactions is so priceless. Mm-hmm. It's like the one part of this documentary where I actually kind of cracked up, because they were like, oh, hell no. Like, what the fuck have we gotten ourselves into? Mm-hmm. And then the other scene that I love so much were the metal protesters.
Oh, yeah. The people that actually decided to confront them.
Yeah.
Because that's the only time you have that perspective in the movie.
Yeah.
There's one guy who said, who was Christian, who thought that they were just pushing it too far. And then there was the guy with the Fear Factory t-shirt.
Yeah. And Papa Roach and Slipknot.
Yeah.
That's
all new metal bands.
I'm just saying, like, that was like the big boogeyman in American culture in the year 2000 was like
Marilyn
teens.
Manson, yeah.
Teens are going to listen to satanic music and shoot up the school.
Right.
Mm-hmm. People were not afraid about like an outside threat. They were afraid about like American youth eating itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
Rammstein, maybe? As an outside threat.
A little German outside threat. But it's pretty interesting that they put that in the doc, and I'm glad that scene is in the doc.
Yeah.
Because these kids, I would say they're 17 or 18 years old, and they're talking to...
They see through the veil.
Yeah, and they're just basically saying, like, why are you pushing this on kids? Like, why is homosexuality so bad that you have to go to hell? He's like, I know a couple gay friends.
Yeah, and I also like that it is still, like, the year 2000, so he's just like, well, you gotta be mean to faggots.
Yeah.
It's still like how he phrases it.
Yeah.
So it's like, I get what
you're
trying
to say. Well, when I was writing...
Best of intentions.
Yeah. No, when I was writing this nu metal thing, I was like, I was sort of like trying to go into the homophobia of nu metal, and that a lot of it was like this weird sort of like trying to be like, I feel like an outsider, so like I'm going to use these gay slurs to describe myself because like I'm so alienated. But it just comes off really homophobic and like ultimately kind of it. Like I was sort of like, I want to see it from like the perspective of somebody who like doesn't think it's fucked up. Mm-hmm. But you kind of, it's pretty fucked up is what you realize.
Yeah.
It's like maybe they're trying to do that at first and then it just turns into like Fred Durst yelling gay slurs at you.
Is Fred Durst new metal?
Yes. Rap rock and new metal.
Rap rock is in the
if
same
somebody's,
pocket.
If somebody's rapping, it's rap rock. But it all kind of got lumped together.
Were you authentically into the nu metal stuff at the time?
It was like secretly. Yeah. It was like I was a teenager, so like I just taped a North Mollywood episode where we talked about nu metal a little bit. It was my friend Andrew T and Alex Papademos were both like a little bit, maybe they were in their 20s already when it was happening, so they were like legitimately too cool to care about it. But I was like still in high school, so it was like a thing that I thought it was like exotic in a weird way.
Yeah. I think I feel that way about like the emo that is like, I guess, when people think Fall Out Boy and Dashboard Confessional, that type of things are emo. And like, I'm still, I wasn't the generation that was like the Fugazi Rites of Spring emo, but that's essentially all the people I looked up
to. Is Fugazi emo?
Yeah, they considered to be.
We fell in that like Gen X millennial gap where like the Gen X people were our older siblings.
Yeah, if you're precocious, then you just like the stuff that the older people like. Right. So culturally, you associate with that more.
Right.
Yeah. A lot of people I work with were really into Fall Out Boy, and I'm like, I am too old to have had this experience.
Oh,
like,
wow.
That's their nu metal of a thing that they all were, like, really into, maybe secretly. But, I mean, I think there are some good nu metal songs. I think it is, like, in retrospect, it's very funny when you look at it. It's like, it did not age well. Aesthetically, which makes it sort of ripe for now to be brought back.
Was there Christian nu metal?
Yeah.
Who's
tons of it.
Let's get into this.
POD.
Okay, right. I didn't know that.
What does that stand for?
Payable on Death. and there was so much overlap between sort of like it actually really
Evanescence?
Evanescence?
Are they Christian? They feel
possibly.
Christian.
I found out I was writing about 21 Pilots recently
Don't know
and
them.
They're like this new band that are very popular. They're rap rock from the Midwest from Ohio, and they are, it turns out, Christian rap. There's a lot of overlap between the sort of like almost satanic stuff and Christian music. One of the guys in Korn, I think it was Head. No, maybe it was Fieldy. Fieldy like became born again and left Korn. A lot of nu metal guys left their bands to become born again and then came back for reunion tours.
Wow. That's going for all the money.
Yeah. But a lot of these, like, you know, parts of California that are not the Bay Area or LA are basically like Texas.
Very Christian.
Very Christian, conservative.
Absolutely.
A lot of, and you know, that's why the teenagers were so amped to rebel, but also a lot of them turned into sort of conservative adults eventually.
Absolutely. Yeah. You have that. This whole country is like that. There's every state is like, has one major liberal city.
Right.
And then hillbilly.
There's like that David Cross bit about that, about how like.
Oh, right. The accent is the same everywhere.
Yeah. Just like how there's rednecks everywhere.
Yeah. Everywhere. And it's all the same kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know? It's just different, sometimes different, different levels of. I say I grew up around Amish people as well. So we had a lot of Amish people and Mennonites.
In Michigan?
Yeah. Really? Yeah. Okay. Southern Michigan's full of Amish and Mennonites. So there's that as well.
It's the sexy cornfield belt.
It is. So Rum Spring, once again. And then, yeah, so we have those fun protesters and then the prayer room.
There. Oh, the prayer room is a very last, I guess. Also, when you think about the haunted house as a narrative journey, it is like an amusement park ride. Or it's like when you think about that as like how you structure that, like, you're structuring stories in space. It's actually really interesting.
That's what I love about it.
Yeah.
The amusement park rides I like are all the ones that are very narrative and very, like, a lot of story buildup. The ones I like less are the ones that are kind of just, like, throwing a bunch of stuff at you.
Right.
Yeah, it reminds me of, like, this, like, there was this avant-garde playwright person in Berkeley who did this huge production of, I want to say, Titus Andronicus, maybe, outside at Yerba Buena, and there were these scenes that was, like, you know, they did this on Girls, like when they recreate that that thing about the apartment scene where there's just different scenes that are just recurring over and over, and then it's about someone that was like raped. They did it in, I think, the last season of Girls, but it's just like when there's like sort of like this loop, like there's people acting.
Oh, are you guys
in these
watching
loops.
Westworld?
I'm not watching. I saw a little bit of the first one.
It's all about acting all about loops over and over again every day, and then
like to the point where there's these scenes where kids are doing the lines where there's already like they're just repeating the lines that are already.
I want
piped
you to
in.
Guys. I want you to watch Westworld just because of the like Hell House narrative loop.
Oh, okay.
Loop.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, it's not the best show, but it's it's interesting enough.
Well, speaking of, there's like a lot of sexual violence in Westworld. That's one reason I'm kind of freaked out about it.
Nobody. The thing about the sexual violence in Westworld is it happens off screen, and because it happens off screen, there's a lot of theory. No, there's like theories that it doesn't happen. That like they show somebody being like taken away, and you assume it's to be raped,
and it's
but
on
then
us
it's like,
that we're assuming that.
Yeah, and then they're like, but maybe he's just telling her information about the workings of the theme park, helping to awaken the robot's consciousness. There's no way to talk about it without sounding so dumb.
I have a couple. We are nearing the end.
I do have
a couple questions.
Let's get to the prayer room.
I brought up sexual violence, and then like let's get to the end.
Yeah, you know, let's.
Well, there's some creepy.
That's kind of how the Hell House is structured, though.
There's the guy that raped me. I guess I forgive him, and I'll keep doing this scene.
Oh,
that was a really gnarly
scene.
That's
the saddest
part.
Because it's like. Now it's like, wouldn't it be? That's when you want a loaded gun in a haunted house.
Yeah,
when your like rapist is in line.
That's a tough scene. For some people who haven't seen this, like almost like a talking head scene.
Yeah,
And that is powerful too because she's like, and then I forgave him through the spirit of the Lord.
Yeah, and you're like, should you forgive him?
Yeah.
I don't know that you should.
No. Yeah, because he's just gonna
and
be
also
one
you
of these guys that gets away with this.
Yeah, and then you're like, and also you should definitely have an abortion.
Yeah,
yeah. So
not read Goosebumps.
Yeah.
Right. If Molly,
those
are
equivalent.
If you were to have a haunted house, what kind of scene would you have?
Ooh. I would love to have a haunted house. I would love to just have like an atmospheric haunted house.
Okay. What does that mean?
Yeah, what does that like? I'm picturing like an art installation.
Yeah.
Just like a lot of like creepy empty rooms.
Would Shia LaBeouf be there?
A green screen room.
Maybe like a haunted ship.
Oh, have you been to the Queen Mary?
No, I have not.
We've been thinking that's the thing to do. Amazing. Well, Queen Mary is like haunted. It's the legitimately boat in haunted. Long Beach. Yeah, that's haunted.
Really?
And you can go for Halloween.
I want to go.
Spend the night. Yeah. Yeah. It's something we've been talking about doing. Yeah.
Wow. That's so you would have atmospheric ship hauntings.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any specific room, any specific, like, with a dead sea captain or...
Ooh, I like the dead sea captain. Good. Just maybe, like, kind of like your Moby Dick, like, the captain goes crazy while you're on the ship kind of scenario. Yeah. Just thinking about, like, some spooky open ocean with, like, maybe a whale getting closer to you.
Right. Yeah. Oh, that's nice.
I think mine might be an Oculus Rift that you can't take off if your head. You're trapped until your eyes go bad.
Whoa.
Oh, I like that. It's like those masks you put on and then you can't take them off, but it's an Oculus Rift. That's great. That is a great idea.
We'll market that.
It's just an Oculus. You should just make that horror movie.
You get an IV in your arm and you just have an Oculus Rift on
you
forever.
Sure we want this on the podcast? That's a great idea. You might want to
copyright.
Yeah, trademark.
Doc.
Pending.
Copyright George Shen.
Pending.
Oculus, what would it be called?
I actually don't even like the name.
Would it be called Rockulus? That'd be more of a musical, I think. Yeah, I think I would have a haunted house that teaches the ways of atheism and not believing in the Lord. So just be like, there'd be a room with like Einstein and then a room with Gandhi, I think.
I like that, like, I don't understand Einstein, so he might as well be a deity to me. Relativity. I wrote it down. It means as much as an ankh.
Right. Stephen Hawking. There'd be a Stephen Hawking room. Well, this has been a pleasure, Molly. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm going to be thinking about haunted houses for the rest of the week.
Yay. You're going to go to the Queen Mary and report back?
Maybe I will, yeah.
I think the three of us would make a great, like, British detective team for some reason. How's your British accent?
Fair.
Good.
Fair to middling.
Jolly
good.
We're going to alienate every British person that listens to the show, which is a lot of them.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
You can find episodes of SupDoc on iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Please subscribe, review, and rate the show.
For show notes, more about Paco and George's appearances, visit supdocpodcast.com.
Please follow us on Twitter and Facebook as SupDoc Podcast.
And the show is produced by Will Scovel, and our theme music is by David Siegel.